Tell me about the mission of OCSIT and what it's, what kind of interactions you have with citizens on a regular basis.
So we created the Office of Citizen Services and Innovative Technologies just about, officially about a year ago.
Mm-hmm.
And we have been, the citizen services component of it has been in business for almost 10 years. And that's the primary area of citizen interaction. And then we brought together the new innovative technologies area. And it's really about using innovative technology to create an open government and to improve the experience that the public has when they're interacting with the government.
Mm-hmm.
So this customer service and providing a good customer experience and interaction is really the focus of the citizen services side.
There is a perception that the focus, because you have the innovative technologies piece in your name, there's a perception that the services that you are involved with are exclusively IT. And I don't think that that's necessarily fair, is it? It's not, that's not the only element of citizen experience you're concerned with.
No, we're really, we have two major components in the citizen services side. So we provide direct service, through the web, through a phone, the phone, call center down in Lakeland, Florida. And then we also distribute print publications, but through the web, we also take emails, we do web chats. And the primary websites are USA.gov, which is kind of our signature website, and then the Spanish version of it, GobiernoUSA.gov.
Mm-hmm.
So we've got the direct service side, and then we also leverage all of the experiences that we have there on our other customers are the agencies, and so we work with federal agencies to help them improve their the experience that they're having with the public. And on that side, we do, we have the Web Manager University, so we do training. We have a contract for a contact center solutions called USA Contact. We have lots of best practices, templates, tools to help agencies and really become an accelerator for them to create an open government mm-hmm. and improve their customer experience.
What are the challenges that they're coming to you and saying, have you dealt with this before? I'm experiencing this issue when it comes to interacting with people.
Well, I think that there's, you know, so take a step back for a second and look at what is a good customer experience. And it's very simple in my mind. And that is, what is, who is your customer? What do they really want from the government? How do they want information? How do you measure their current satisfaction? I mean, we know a lot of we have a lot of information about the customers, but, you know, it's widespread that agencies don't actually, you know, in all kinds of systems, whether it's dealing with the public or not, you know, include the what the customer wants.
Mm-hmm.
And then looking at, you know, measuring their satisfaction, how do they help each other? How do you collect that input? How do you then turn their comments and their, you know, expectations into continuous improvement
mm-hmm.
to make the services up to their expectation. I mean, the another challenge is that in especially like in the call center world, the amount of money that it takes to infuse into creating, you know, a world-class experience is more difficult and more expensive because it involves hiring, you know, a higher level of agents. And so there's a lot of issues around that. But, you know, other challenges are just, you know, how do you do it?
Mm-hmm.
And an example would be in the social media area. So any of the new areas that we get into, you've got, you know, exactly step-by-step instructions. I mean, I don't know if you remember, but we had negotiated the federal friendly terms of service agreements with a lot of the new media providers, and they were on one website. And
mm-hmm.
then we had another website that had best practices and some case studies. And so what we're doing, one of the big initiatives that we're doing right now is pulling all that together in a new website called howto.gov
mm-hmm.
that's really going to be how-to step-by-step instructions, best practices, case studies, access to kind of policy-compliant, no-cost tools that they can use, all of the Web Manager University access to networks of web managers, access to networks of contact center leaders. We're building a mobile community of practice. So there's just giving people, you know, down to earth, written in plain language, instructions on how to make some of these improvements and changes going forward, I think, is one of the biggest challenges.
Are you working with the agencies, too, on the content that goes into working on some of these platforms, or are you helping them deliver the information? You and I were talking before we went on the air about where a lot of agencies found themselves a couple of years ago, right after those terms of service came out. People would say, okay, well, now I know I can get on Facebook and meet everything, so we're going to create a Facebook page, and then nobody knew what to put on it or who to direct it to or who to push toward that as far as citizens or customers to create an opportunity to interact with them. It was just the idea of being there for the sake of being there.
So I think what we really try to do is, again, take a step back and look at the problem they're trying to solve,
mm-hmm.
rather than, and then decide, you know, what the best technology is to help them achieve that. So in the new media space, for example, that's one example. In the customer, like the citizen engagement platform, where we have tools that they can create wikis and blogs and forums, or even to run a challenge. So we talked to the agency again. What is it you're trying to do? What are you trying to solve? And, you know, is it an engagement where you want ongoing, you know, engagement? Do you need a solution that you don't have money to provide? So you could, you know, run a challenge and see if that would provide you with the solution. So I think that's the thing that gets lost in many cases in town is, you know, we are always looking for the new sizzly technology, mm-hmm. and we really need to take a step back and make sure that we're solving the government's biggest problems.
At the same time, do you find that the people that you deal with at the agencies understand all the possibilities, or are they locked into a couple of potential solutions because that's what they've heard everybody else is doing?
I don't think that they know all the solutions, and I think we're trying to make it easier for them to figure out all the solutions through how-to, at least all the solutions that we have available to mm-hmm. them. There's all kinds of commercial solutions that they can go out and, you know, an example is in the challenge area, we only provide challenge.gov, but a lot of the challenges that are being conducted across the government are actually done by, you know, commercial sources, and then they're just put on challenge.gov so that we have a single place for the public to go to actually find all the challenges that, mm-hmm. that the government's running.
What is the hardest part for you to work with people at other agencies to get them to understand that maybe when they come into this discussion they weren't aware of, or something that you know they're going to be up against but they don't know they're going to be up against, or something like that?
I think that there's always the policy issues and the legal issues mm-hmm. that you have to work people through, because, and that's why almost every product that we, you know, get involved with, we look at how can we make them so that agencies can just either take our terms of service as a template to their legal, you know, their general counsels and have them cleared, or the tools that we create and make available, they're, you know, 508 tested, so they're accessible. They've been secured. The privacy issues are dealt with. The PRA issues are dealt with, so that we do all the heavy lifting so that we can save them time, you know, and money mm-hmm. and resources in actually implementing them in their agencies.
So it's the idea that they just can't walk in and pick up some application and start using it, that there is a procedure they have to go through. And in many cases, you've gone through that already. They just don't know it yet.
Right. And we make sure that, I mean, even if they wanted to create a blog and they wanted to use our citizen engagement platform, they could go to a commercial, you know, open source blog tool and use it, but they would have to go through all those, you know, and have the approvals. We don't try to tell them whether or not they should do it internally. They need to obviously go through their own agency's rules and regulations to make sure that that they're allowed to do that. But the policy lifts and the legal work has been done.
Mm-hmm. I did notice a big proliferation of the use of those tools when that TOS deal was done.
Yes.
Because there was finally a floor where agencies could say, if nothing else, if my legal team doesn't add anything here, I can build on this platform pretty safely.
Right. Another challenge that we found is there's so many things, tools out there that are popping up that you don't even really know what they do.
Mm-hmm.
And so what we tried to do is, as we were creating the terms of service, hold new media talks for agencies so that they could actually be demonstrated what those tools do. So mm-hmm. it's kind of an outreach and education and creating the framework and the foundation so that they can implement them as quickly as possible.
It's an interesting combination of tasks that you have, and we'll talk more about them when we come back on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. It's In Depth with Francis Rose, Martha Doris of the General Services Administration, my guest for the hour, and we'll continue in a moment.
Federally employed women, few, the organization of choice for leadership, equity, and the advancement of women, would like to extend an invitation to FEW's 42nd National Training Program, NTP. Your future, let it ring the sound of success in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, July 18th through 22nd. The NTP program is the largest training opportunity in the world for women in federal employment. The training program will again include training tracks, which will result in focused career-enhancing training and a better-trained employee in the following subject areas: executive leadership, project management, science and technology, business analysis, and human resources. The networking opportunities are endless. You'll meet other government employees at all grade levels from across the nation. The 2011 NTP program, your future, let it ring the sound of success in Philadelphia, July 18th through 22nd. For more details or to sign up, please call 202-898-0994. That's 202-898-0994 or visit fewnpt.org. That's fewnpt.org.
Homeland Security doesn't just happen. It takes vigilance, intelligence, and experience to see and solve a problem long before it happens. TASC has done this for America's intelligence and defense communities for more than 40 years. As a proven and trusted partner in our nation's security, TASC has the most sophisticated IT solutions and tailored program management expertise to help DHS protect Americans. Homeland Security, by design. That's TASC. Learn more at TASC.com.
If you're like most people, you have many financial questions, like, can I afford to retire? How do I protect my nest egg? Will I outlive my money? Hi, I'm Mark Tabron. We'll tackle these questions and more every Saturday morning at 10:30. Learn how to protect and grow your money with me, Mark Tabron, on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Can't wait until Saturday? Call Tabron & Associates Financial Services at 301-773-3923.
The FedCloud blog on federalnewsradio.com takes a look at the issues surrounding cloud computing through the eyes of those who are using it every day. We'll share with you the challenges, opportunities, and lessons learned from some of the top minds in the world of federal IT. Collaborate with others and help shape the discussion on cloud computing at the FedCloud blog on federalnewsradio.com or follow the FedCloud blog on Twitter. The FedCloud blog is sponsored by Cisco and Intel.
The Federal Long-Term Care Insurance Program open season is here. Did you know that at least 70% of people over age 65 will need long-term care at some point in their lives? Long-term care services are expensive. You may need to rely on loved ones or pay for long-term care services out of your income or assets. Fortunately, the Federal Long-Term Care Insurance Program was designed to help protect against the high costs of care. Open season ends on June 24th. Visit ltcfeds.com to learn more today.
Federal news and information just got more fun and interesting. Amy Morris joins Tom Temin on The Federal Drive, weekday mornings from 6 to 10. Tom and Amy tailor their show for Feds on the Go with usable information from trustworthy and seasoned journalists. You're going to learn, but they also might make you laugh. The Federal Drive with Tom Temin and Amy Morris, 6 a.m. to 10 a.m. on Federal News Radio, 1500 a.m.
We're back on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. My guest for the hour is Martha Doris of the General Services Administration. And one of the things that your team has been responsible for at the Office of Citizen Services and Innovative Technology is the redesign of USA.gov. I finished it up last fall. It's dramatically different than before you started. At what point in time do you decide, not just with this redesign, but more in general, what we've got is outdated enough that this is where we want to move resources, this is where we want to spend money and have time devoted to it, that kind of thing?
So we had in our plan that we wanted to redesign USA.gov because I think you just, you know, the look and feel of websites change over time, and so much of whether it's, you know, my experience or the public's experience is driven by their consumer experience. So, mm-hmm. You kind of know how you feel when you're using consumer websites, And you just kind of get to the point where you know that, at least from a look and feel perspective, that it needs some freshening up. We have done in the past, like, total redesigns. And we really didn't want to do a total redesign. We wanted to do continual upgrades and changes to it, because it's so difficult. But mm-hmm. We were lucky enough to get, you know, the attention of OMB, and we worked really closely with Vivek to totally redesign USA.gov and have a nice big launch for it. So, you know, we went through a process of, it's a very link-based system, but we have a brand new search capability that is a commercial-grade search engine. It gets lightning speed response time. Mm-hmm. It's built on the Bing index, so that we have editorial control over that, so we can boost content. And it's got all the commercial features of any commercial-grade search engine. So it's got search as you type, relevant links, access to government forms. And so we knew that we had that capability we wanted to make more prominent on the site. We knew we wanted the new look and feel to be cleaner. We didn't want so much clutter on the front page. And we'd been talking about mobile for several years, so we wanted to start looking and putting some focus on mobile technology and mobile apps. So we started working with agencies to see what apps were out there. And in some cases, we found the apps were buried two or three clicks in their website. So we brought all those up into the mobile apps gallery. And then the other piece we wanted to highlight was around citizen engagement and the use of dialogues and challenges. So we took all of that as our input and started coming up with the design. And, you know, we look at analytics too to know exactly, you know, when you need to do a redesign. You start looking at what kind of information people are looking for, what they're searching on, where they're, what they're clicking on, what's getting the most traffic, and your satisfaction ratings. And then, you know, look at what you think your customer expectations are, and then start coming up with the design. So we actually did the design, or did the website, in about 6 weeks. Mm-hmm. And then it took a little while to put some tweaks on it and get the right slot of time to launch it. But we're really proud of, what we accomplished in that short period of time.
We talked a little bit off the air about the idea that every time a survey comes out that measures citizen satisfaction with government websites, the comparison's always made, and I'm as guilty as anybody. We claim that people want to experience the same thing when they're on USA.gov or any other federal website that they experience when they go to the big websites in the private sector, like Amazon or eBay or whatever. Is that a fair comparison, do you think, or is it apples and oranges?
I guess I think both. I think it is a fair comparison, because we should always be striving to be the best that we can be. And so leveraging the experience and some of the leaders in the commercial space is something for us to strive for. Mm-hmm. But I think in many cases we have either legal or policy issues that don't allow us to provide the same level of service. I mean, with the cookie policies the way they've been, you can't track people on the websites. And so, we can't provide that same level of kind of intimacy when they come back to the mm-hmm. site, like we know what they've been doing.
Right.
Because so some of it is a great model for us to benchmark against and to strive for. And on the other hand, we do what we can with what we have.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's new stuff coming out all the time that we should be on the leading edge, maybe not always the bleeding edge. But I think that if it's tried and tested, and we find that that's something that is expected from a website, then we try to leverage it.
I think people assume too that you had this big rollout last fall, and then I think there are a lot of folks that believe that you're going to go off and pay attention to other things from now on, and don't understand that there's a lot of tinkering around the edges and under the hood that goes on at a site like USA.gov on an ongoing basis. It's not just we do this big rollout and we'll let it sit like this for a couple of years until we decide it's time to do it all over again.
Well, one of the things that we've been working on for the last couple of months is we have USA.gov, and then we have the Spanish version, Gobierno USA.gov, and we had about five other consumer websites. And what we're trying to do is bring together, it's a lot of very high value content. We have like kids.gov. It is the only place that you can get kid appropriate content around government information. So we pull together all of the content government wide. So if you were to go on a commercial search engine and search for space, mm-hmm. you're going to get every story about, Martians on the, in space.
Area 51.
Exactly. And if you go in kids.gov, what you get is kid appropriate based on age content that's across the government. Mm-hmm. So we're integrating all of that really rich, hand curated content from all those websites that the consumers have been looking at and using for years into USA.gov. So we're bringing the millions and millions of eyeballs that look at USA.gov and Gobierno and the rich content together to create and going back to a better customer experience for the public.
A lot of those eyeballs are coming from devices that they weren't coming from a couple of years ago, and we'll talk about that, the mobile devices in particular, when we continue on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Martha Doris of the General Services Administration, my guest on In Depth with Francis Rose.
Alan Hecht, Director for Sustainable Development from the Environmental Protection Agency, commented during the panel discussion, Beyond Green, Making Sustainability Sustainable.
We're trying to bring the value of ecosystem services into our design of systems. We're trying to move away from saying, how do I manage waste when I could better manage the materials that go into products and reduce waste?
To hear this show in its entirety, go to federalnewsradio.com. Keyword, Booz Allen.
Amid challenging budgetary and regulatory circumstances, government agencies are under increased pressure to improve operational efficiency and account for impacts to the environment, our natural resources, and society. The strategy and technology consultants of Booz Allen Hamilton have over 30 years of experience helping organizations assess, improve, and implement their sustainability initiatives, going beyond compliance to integration with and enhancement of the agency's mission. Count on Booz Allen to help you be ready for what's next. Learn more at boozallen.com/expertvoices.
With vacation time just around the corner, are you ready to go? Since 1967, Ackerman Security Systems has been keeping families like yours safe and secure. For just $18.95 a month, you can trust in the protection of Ackerman's nationally certified monitoring center. And Ackerman offers the latest technology, like cell phone control, wireless monitoring, and remote video to your web-enabled phone, iPad, or laptop. Call 888-999-1070 or on the web at Ackerman.com. Security.com.
Concerned about your health? Then be sure to catch the groundbreaking radio show, Essentials of Healthy Living, brought to you by Village Green Apothecary in Bethesda. Join hosts Dana Lake and Kevin Passero as they bring you the latest news about traditional and alternative medicine, dietary supplements, nutrition, and healthy living. Tune in every Sunday at 10 a.m. on Federal News Radio. Visit MyVillageGreen.com. Listen to past shows and discover other healthy living resources. Essentials of Healthy Living is sponsored by Zymogen and Metagenics.
Geospatial intelligence is one of the fastest growing industries across the defense, intelligence, and homeland security community. Come to the United States Geospatial Intelligence Foundation's Career Fair on Tuesday, May 10th to learn more about exciting job opportunities and openings. This career fair is absolutely free and no registration is required. Don't miss the USGIF Career Fair, Tuesday, May 10th from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. at the Hyatt Regency in Reston. For more information, go to usgif.org. That's usgif.org.
Profile America, Tuesday, April 26th. One of the greatest scientific achievements in history began this week 21 years ago, when the crew of the Space Shuttle Discovery put the Hubble Space Telescope into orbit. The telescope was named for the great American astronomer Edwin Hubble. It has produced far more distant images than Earth-bound instruments can achieve, and has largely rewritten our understanding of the universe and how it works. Between 1993 and 2009, the Hubble telescope was serviced and upgraded five times by shuttle crews. From 2000 to 2009, the U.S. launched 54 non-commercial space vehicles, along with 24 commercial launches. You can find these and more facts about America from the U.S. Census Bureau online at census.gov.
It wasn't so long ago that collaboration was a bad word in government. Today, we know that the only way to solve our biggest challenges is for industry and government to work together to collaborate. At its upcoming Management of Change conference at the Homestead in Hot Springs, Virginia, ACT-IAC provides an ethical and trusted forum to explore solutions to our most pressing IT challenges. Be a collaborator. Register for Management of Change today at actgov.org. That's actgov.org.
Thanks for listening to In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. My guest on In Depth this hour is Martha Doris from the General Services Administration, talking about communicating with citizens and serving citizens through the Office of Citizen Services and Innovative Technologies. And one of the ways that more people want to be served day after day is through mobile devices. I'm finally, maybe about 3 years after most normal humans joined the mobile revolution, got myself a Droid not too long ago. So I was very pleased in some of the notes that you sent over to see that you get the balance, the fact that not everybody in the world is an iPerson. Nothing against people that are iUser. You have an iPad, right? Did you bring it along today? Don't have it with you. But there has been, I think, because the iPhone kind of got a jump on the rest of the mobile device community, there's been an emphasis on that, especially I've noticed it in government, and not just at the federal level, state and local too. How do you make decisions about how to present information to people and try to reach as many people as possible and not leave out folks that are choosing different kinds of technology or choosing different ways to receive the information that they want?
So mobile is definitely, you know, a huge area. I mean, what we did was we've been looking at the traffic and not just traffic, but the data around mobile. So just, you know, a few data points, which was the smartphones outsold PCs in the fourth quarter last year. You know, half of the cell phone users now will own smartphones by the end of 2011. 50% of cell phone smartphone owners access the internet through their smartphones. About a third of them have data plans. Two-thirds of them gather information on their mobile devices. And about three-quarters of them say having a mobile device to be able to access information and services makes their life easier. So you take all of that, and you know, we created the mobile apps gallery on USA.gov. And I think there's about 48 mobile apps on there right now. When we first started that, we had to enter into terms of service negotiations with all of the users, so, or all of the carriers. So we, you know, we talked to Google, we talked to RIM, and we talked to BlackBerry. And so once we got those in place, which was not an easy task. That kind of opened the door for all of the platforms. And we really try to be platform agnostic. I mean, we're really trying to get agencies as well as us to create platform agnostic, you know, mobile apps.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, the resources that are available to build apps is very limited. And I've even heard on the show here, people talking about the expertise to build mobile apps. And what we focus on in our office is around the citizen-facing apps as opposed to more of the enterprise apps mm-hmm. for internal business. We also are in a really great, you know, position in OCSIT because we also have the website data.gov. And so being able to leverage the data that's out there in data.gov and create an environment where third parties can create mobile apps is really kind of where the big push is going to be because, I mean, if you look at the Apple model in terms of where those apps are created, you know, it's probably 300,000. And I don't know the exact number right now, but on the Apple Store, and they didn't create one of them.
Mm-hmm.
And so figuring out that process is part of what we're doing.
Mm-hmm.
So we created a mobile PMO within OCSIT that kind of bridges the citizen-facing stuff with the data on data.gov to figure out and work with agencies. Gwen Costin in our office is running it, and she has created a mobile community of practice with about 22 agencies. And And really, we're in the infancy of the whole mobile movement, and they're working right now to identify what are the barriers and the challenges that they all face. At the very beginning, how do you even go through the process of getting your mobile app, you know, certified and into a store, mm-hmm. whether regardless of whether it's a black, you know, goes on the BlackBerry store or the iPhone store or in the
Android
yeah,
market.
Exactly.
Yeah. You mentioned that in the last segment that you started looking at mobile about 4 years ago. I imagine 4 years ago, if you told people in government we're going to think about the mobile market, they probably look at you and thought that you were a little bit out there because that nobody else was really doing it then. No, but at least nobody in the United States was thinking about it. There were probably other countries where mobile technology's been deployed a lot more broadly, a lot longer. But I imagine here people didn't pay a whole lot of attention to you at first.
Well, in the Nordic countries, particularly where you know the wireless you know environment is more mature, they've definitely been looking at mobile government, and many countries have called it m-government for you know 5 to 7 years probably.
Mm-hmm.
We looked at creating m.usa.gov about 4 years ago, so we've had a mobile site for a very long time. And I did not mention earlier, but USA.gov and Gobierno both have a mobile site as well as a mobile app. So
mm-hmm.
It's available wherever you want it, whenever you want it, and you can search the entire government space using our mobile app. But Nordic countries definitely have been a big user in the mobile space for a long time. So if you looked at the data 4 years ago, I mean, more people are getting cell phones every day than replacing their computers. Mm-hmm. I mean, I know, you know, and if you look at the demographics and the kids, you know, as they're growing up, they're all, you know, everybody, all teenagers probably want data, you know, phones with the smartphones today.
Yeah. My son is 11 and has no interest at all in owning a box with a screen hooked up to it. Just doesn't care.
Right.
But is fascinated by his iPod Touch and wants to get an iPhone at some point. I told him it'll be a while. When he can pay for his data plan, he can have an
exactly.
iPhone. That's what
well,
I told
that's another him. Issue with the.
Well, and that's one of the things that you mentioned earlier is the issue with the data. When you were listing some of those stats, the data plan is becoming almost as important to the consumer as the piece of hardware that they carry around, the ability
right.
to get the information. And that's what leads you, I imagine, to some of the decisions and some of the strategies that you've implemented.
The other big data point is that the minority population, either African-American or Hispanic population, is using smartphones at a much higher rate than other populations.
Mm-hmm.
So it gives you a way to get to the underserved in some cases much easier. So, you know, where in the past you had to be at a computer to get stuff online or you could call a call center, now all of those lines are blurring so that you can actually get to more people.
And I read a number, and I wish I would have brought the actual data to share with you, but demographically, as far as household income, same thing is the case where you have a higher percentage of smartphones with data plans in households below $50,000 a year, because that's an affordable entry point to them. They can't afford to go out and buy an iPad for $500 and with a data plan and so on. But a smartphone for $49 or $99 or whatever, that they can pull that. Martha Doris is my guest from the General Services Administration on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Continue our conversation about serving citizens in just a moment.
NBC News Radio, I'm Nora O'Donnell. A levee on the Black River in Poplar Bluff, Missouri has failed in several places, sending water rushing into the city. 15 inches of rain has soaked the area over the past 4 days. Police Sergeant Keith Hefner says more than 1,000 people have been evacuated, but rescues continue.
We're now well above 70 water rescues in the general.
Meanwhile, in Arkansas, they're bracing for another round of severe weather. 4 people were killed in the town of Vilonia, which was nearly destroyed by a twister yesterday.
Honestly, we just held on to each other and just said we loved each other, and that was bad.
In other news, millions of Americans are now spending over half their income to pay rent and utilities. A new study by Harvard University says soaring rental rates and fewer vacancies are responsible for the tight squeeze. And the news for homeowners is still downbeat. Based on a closely watched home price index, prices dropped in 19 of 20 metro areas from January to February. I'm Nora O'Donnell, NBC News Radio.
Mother's Day is not for celebrating moms. It's for celebrating all our moms have given us. And now, celebrating those things is even easier with new postage-paid cards, only from Hallmark. Just pick the perfect card, then sign, seal, and send. No stamp required. So this Mother's Day, tell your mom how much she means to you with new postage-paid cards, available everywhere Hallmark is sold.
Postage paid available for select cards, U.S. only.
At CarMax, we know honesty is the key to providing great customer service. However, we also understand that there are times when you're better off not being honest. For instance, when filling out the What I Look For in a Person section of your online dating profile, you may not want to write, My mother. But when a customer asks us to appraise their car, we know this calls for total honesty. Not only do our buyers have an offer ready in 30 minutes, you can have up to 7 days to think about it or walk away with payment in hand. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
The Federal Broadband Minute, provided by Hughes.
How much bandwidth is needed for field offices to meet their agency's missions? The answer? It depends on your mission and your network. One size does not fit all. Too little at some sites may mean you can't run critical, bandwidth-hungry applications. Too much at others means you're wasting tax dollars. You need to tailor bandwidth requirements at each location to ensure your network achieves your agency's mission. Only Hughes National Managed Broadband Service delivers bandwidth tailored to fit at every site affordably to quickly access voice, video, and data for daily operations or to reach your agency's cloud. Hughes technology includes built-in WAN optimization, ensuring high-quality voice and data traffic is delivered on time and with optimal bandwidth efficiency. Enable your government field office of the future today. From Hughes.
Visit government.hughes.com/WFED.
This audio puzzle is brought to you by Quest Government Services. Identify the federal agency problem.
Am I number enough? All the other information is way prettier. I look fat in this network, don't I?
The answer? Insecure data. With Quest's suite of security solutions, even your most sensitive data stays protected. For a free risk assessment, visit quest.com/federal. That's quest.com/federal.
Newsmakers, talk to Jason Miller.
Howard Schmidt is the White House cyber coordinator.
It's not a matter that I have to go in and deal with people and try to sell how important cybersecurity is. The secretaries, deputy secretaries, the executive management across the departments and agencies, across the executive office of the president. One of the things that I'm really heartened by is the fact that there is tremendous attention and everybody gets it. And the issue is how do we make this better?
Hear the entire interview online, federalnewsradio.com/federaldrive.
Thanks for listening to In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Martha Doris of the General Services Administration in studio with me this hour. We've talked about some of the ways that you're engaging citizens and some of the different things that you're trying, some of the innovative, not just the technologies being innovative, but the methods of reaching people and engaging them in what you're doing. Talk about some of the ways, some of those, and in a way that might give somebody at an agency an idea of how to bring people in and maybe even collaborate with citizens in ways that they haven't really seemed applicable to government before.
Okay, thanks, Francis. That's a great question because we have two very different, you know, customer bases and on the citizen side, which we've talked about, and then we work very closely with federal agencies. And we really do leverage a lot of communities, whether it's like web managers or contact center leaders or the mobile community of practice. We also work with CIOs both at the federal level, and we work with CIOs across five countries, which we haven't talked too much about, where we bring the CIOs from like the US, the UK, Canada, New Zealand, and Australia together on a quarterly basis and actually talk about the issues they all face in a very safe environment so they can share and learn from each other. Mm-hmm. So we can hit that if we have time at the end.
Let me just ask you real quick before I lose that thought. Do they see the same things that Vivek sees in their countries?
Yeah. All countries, sometimes there's a little difference in the level of maturity.
Mm-hmm.
But when we bring up a topic, like in one session, we do video teleconferences quarterly,
mm-hmm.
and then try to bring them together face to face once a year. And when on one meeting, we pick the topic for the next one. And sometimes we change it. But issues around, the technology reform stuff that's out right now, we talked about that with all five countries. And we were, Vivek was using it as a way to kind of brainstorm his ideas against what other countries were doing. And they're all countries that are about in the same state. So
mm-hmm.
you even when you go on a broader spectrum, we work with an organization called the International Council for IT and Government Administration. There's about 26 countries, and it's the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
Countries around the world are all dealing with the same challenges and experiences. So.
That's fascinating to me because of all the differences that are involved there, structures of government, political processes,
right.
political parties in power. To hear that none of that is really relevant, what's relevant is the kinds of services that they need to provide.
Some of the cultural issues and the policies around even privacy or like national ID cards, those bring up some differences, but they're all, everybody's trying to go to the same place. And the big commonality is everybody's really in business to provide service to the public
mm-hmm.
and do a good customer experience.
All right. So tell me about some of the things that you're doing that are a little bit off the beaten path that agencies are still trying to wrap their heads around.
So there's about five or six things. We do the tools, which I've mentioned. It's kind of no cost policy compliant tools.
Mm-hmm.
And we have the citizen engagement platform and challenge.gov. But we also, the search capability that I mentioned before that we have on USA.gov, we have an affiliate program, which there's about 300 government websites that are using that right now. And I think it takes like three clicks to download it onto your website. And we're saving governments, thousands and thousands of dollars with each implementation. And they can just bring it onto their site. They can tweak it a little bit. They can boost their own agency content. And we're kind of working right now to just let agencies know. I mean, one of our big challenges is just outreach and letting people know, let the citizens know what's available to them and letting agencies know all these products that are available to them. And they're also available to state and local websites.
Mm-hmm.
So all .gov websites have the option of downloading this website onto their site.
Mm-hmm.
So we're extremely proud of it. And we have a hotshot, search team that, lives, eats, and breathes search technology and how to improve that all the time.
Mm-hmm.
So that's one area. Then we do training through Web Manager University. We do the best practices and the USA contract, which I'll talk about just a second, which is an IDIQ contract with 9 call center vendors, and we can put a call center in place for an agency. Back when the VA lost the laptop computer,
mm-hmm.
we got a call from OMB at 4 o'clock on Friday. We were taking calls at noon on Monday.
Mm-hmm.
So we have the relationship with the vendors. We have a couple of really big customers coming on. So we're very excited about the ability to set up contact centers for other agencies. And we get great prices because we have such great competition from nine mm-hmm. leading vendors. Then the terms of service, and then we do some consulting and some providing of expertise, whether they're trying to talk them through the problems that they have and understand how to solve it with our tools and technology that we have.
When we come back from the break, I want to ask you about the challenges, because that's one area where I think somebody who is predisposed to not either understand or want to understand the benefits of that could think that the wrong thing is going on there. So I want to have you explain that and explain the return on investment to the agency on that when we come back. Martha Doris of the General Services Administration with me on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Federally employed women, few.
The organization of choice for leadership, equity, and the advancement of women would like to extend an invitation to FUSE 42nd National Training Program, NTP. Your future, let it ring the sound of success in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, July 18th through 22nd. The NTP program is the largest training opportunity in the world for women in federal employment. The training program will again include training tracks, which will result in focused career-enhancing training and a better trained employee in the following subject areas: executive leadership, project management, science and technology, business analysis, and human resources. The networking opportunities are endless. You will meet other government employees at all grade levels from across the nation. The 2011 NTP program, your future. Let it ring the sound of success in Philadelphia, July 18th through 22nd. For more details or to sign up, please call 202-898-0994. That's 202-898-0994. Or visit fewnpt.org. That's fewntp.org.
Meeting Mission Goals Through Technology, brought to you by General Dynamics Information Technology.
DISA, the Defense Information Systems Agency, is adding a social networking layer to its software development collaboration system. Forge.mil is DISA's shared software development environment. Forge.mil Community will let developers organize into groups and sub-communities to share their development work with Defense Department stakeholders. DISA imagines those groups forming around communities of interest, organizations, mission areas, or specific technologies.
General Dynamics Information Technology is dedicated to providing the latest, highest quality information technology services and resources to help organizations meet their mission objectives. Large-scale IT systems and communications networks are the strategic and operational heart of defense, intelligence, civilian government, and private business. They require the expertise of a company that delivers results. General Dynamics Information Technology. Information technology and professional services. Go to GDIT.com to learn more. That's GDIT.com.
This is Lisa Millman from AFMA. For over 132 years, we've been protecting soldiers, airmen, and their families with low-cost life insurance and unique survivor assistance services. We focus on our members' best interests. That means offering the best prices on life insurance for military personnel and policies with no war, no aviation, and no terrorism clauses or surcharges. Get a free quote today at AFMA.com. That's AAFMAA.com.
Cybersecurity runs deeper than information assurance. It includes mobile security, cyber innovations, forensics, collaboration. That's why last month the Defense Department increased its cyber budget request by nearly $1 billion. And it's why DHS is taking unprecedented steps to assume responsibility government-wide. Join AFSEA Bethesda on April 29th at the Bethesda North Marriott for its executive breakfast on the latest developments in mission-critical cybersecurity. For speaker lineup and to register, visit AFSEABethesda.com.
Back on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Martha Doris from GSA is with me. And we're talking about challenge.gov. And one of the things that, one of the reasons I think that this concept is pretty cool is, one of the greatest complaints that's lodged against people who work for the federal government is you're inside the Beltway, you're insulated from the rest of the country, you don't know what's going on out here, and you don't understand what the rest of the country looks like. And this is a tremendous opportunity, it seems to me, to be able to get people to interact with what's going on, not just in Washington, but wherever the federal government is. Talk about the genesis of challenge.gov and how agencies are using it successfully.
So challenge.gov is one way that you can engage with the public. And it, when you take a step back and look at open government, you've got transparency, collaboration, and participation. And so it kind of hits all three legs of the stool.
Mm-hmm.
And a challenge is really where the government can solve a problem and take advantage of expertise or knowledge or experts outside of their own organization. We all know that, you know, we don't have all the good ideas in our own organization. We don't have all the good ideas in our own agency. And in many, many cases, there are experts, there are college students, there's, you know, people that have retired in their basements that just have knowledge that we can't tap into without something like challenge.gov. Mm-hmm. So what we do is we identify the problem we want to solve, and then you provide a prize for the winning solution. So one of the benefits is you only pay for what what you get.
Mm-hmm.
So you're not, you know, for the winning solution. So it's really very, very cost-effective way to solve government problems.
Mm-hmm.
And you can use it for anything from creating a video or a poster contest or all the way up to green cars, new energy efficient light bulbs. I know NASA's used it very effectively. So in our office is a small example. We had two of them. One, we do a public service ad up until this year, almost every year. We spend close to $1 million. And in these budget times, we knew we couldn't spend that kind of money. So we ran a video contest. We got like 30 outstanding videos, which are now available to us for the life of the, you know, they're on YouTube for the, and they were great, really high energy, fun kind of videos. We selected one that got a prize of $2,500. And again, it lives on forever. So we get great marketing for USA.gov through that mechanism, and we've saved a lot of money in doing it that way.
Yeah.
So we also, with kids.gov, one of the most frequently asked questions is, how do I become a president? So we had a poster contest, and somebody entered the poster, and we sent 10,000 of them out to schools and libraries.
Mm-hmm.
So there's some great examples. I know Department of Energy did a green car X Prize, and they went out and looked for a car that would seat four people, meet the federal safety standards, and go over 100 miles a gallon. And so they had about 136 entries, and they downsized it to like 9 finalists, and the winners were announced in September 2010. So things that they never thought were possible can be made possible by tapping into the expertise around the country.
There is always more stuff to talk about than there is time to talk about it when you come in, Martha. It's great to see you again. Thanks for being here today.
Thank you.
We're going to post this conversation up at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth so you can hear it anytime you want. And we have links, of course, to all the sites that Martha talked about on the program today at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. Hour number 2 of the program is right around the corner. And just a lot of things to cover on the program this afternoon. So I hope you continue listening till 7 o'clock tonight on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.